Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report. I am John Iadarola. That's rote. That's an everyday thing. You know, it's not every day. The appearance, Sharon Reed. Sharon, welcome back to the show. Glad to have you here.
It's an honor to be here. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you here, particularly with such a big news day. The Supreme Court did some stuff, and so now we need to deal with it. We've got SCOTUS decisions, not all of the ones that are expected to come this week. They decided to just throw out a couple of bombs and then flee, I guess, for a while. But we've got updates on important stories, including further information from the immediate aftermath of the killing of Jordan Neely. We've got Biden defending his economic plans that he points to numbers that look good, but most people aren't buying it. So we're going to evaluate some of the evidence when it comes to that. More excerpts from former Trump aide Miles Taylor's upcoming book. In this case, he's talking about Trump, who apparently did quite a bit of talking about Ivanka. So we're going to deal with that and resurface some video that I think perhaps provides some context for it, and a whole lot more besides. Once we get into the aftermath, we're going to be talking about how technology is going to help you maintain your health in the future, basically by doing stuff like breathing on your phone and occasionally licking it. That's what the best tech heads in the world are telling us is coming, so prepare yourself. And a very notable YouTuber responding to claims of grooming in a questionable way. So all of that is coming up on the aftermath. In advance of that, please hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live. And if you want to reach out to myself or to Sharon with comments, tweets, super chats, and all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Sharon, ready to start the show?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it, starting with this.
The worst thing about affirmative action is that it created a Clarence Thomas who benefited from the program and now is in a position where he's going to deny many young African-American talented individuals an opportunity. Historically, the problem has been that institutions of higher learning, corporations, companies, and other entities have denied well-qualified African-Americans and other individuals access in terms of admissions and employment because of their race.
That is the president of the NAACP, Derek Johnson, and he is right, at least insofar as saying that Clarence Thomas was going to aid the insane, wildly right-wing Supreme Court that we have right now in effectively, broad strokes, destroying affirmative action. And that's what they did. That was their big announcement of the day. There are other cases that are pending that we will find out about through the rest of the week. But they've effectively done it. The decision that was put out today puts an end to systems designed to help Black and Latino students access higher education after centuries of racial discrimination. Colleges and universities will no longer be allowed to seek greater diversity of their student bodies by preferencing race. They're wording it preferencing race, basically being legally allowed to have that be one of many considerations. That is effectively what is being banned right now. Obviously, this is the culmination of decades of right-wing effort to stop these sorts of programs that have already banned them in a number of different states. The original affirmative action policies were adopted in the late 1960s, coming out of the civil rights movement. They aimed to increase Black and Latino attainment in higher education. Almost instantly, some white Americans had an issue with it. I know it's a shocker, but they did. Conservative politicians came to see this as a form of, quote, reverse racism, which I was taught growing up by right-wing media is the only kind that exists. And they said that basically that makes it so white students have effectively no chance of getting into college. Now, the numbers, of course, don't bear that out. But what they did bear out was that in some states over the course of decades, these programs did nudge things towards a bit more equality. Not actual representation commensurate with percentage of the population or anything like that. But it did move a little bit closer. That now will maybe, oh, I was going to say it would be taught in history classes, but God knows what will be left of history classes soon in America. But that said, Sharon, what do you think of the SCOTUS decision today?
I think that this is what happens when a group of people don't go to work too much, go on vacation with billionaires, and when they do show up at the job, they're in their bathrobes and they think they know what's best for the rest of us. They don't. And I'm disgusted by it, of course, but I'm also disgusted by how we got here because they've been chipping away at this forever, as you eloquently pointed out. But at the end of the day, I want those on the left, those who believe in certain values for this America, where we all reside here, to fight and stop being on their heels. The right, devilish as they are so creative. And they figure things out and they find one or two Asian people. You know, Asian people support affirmative action, by the way, but never mind that. But they find a few plaintiffs and they do this dirt and they get it before the perfect Supreme Court. And in between those justices taking gifts from the billionaires, they decide that it's over. And that's what this really means. It's over. You called it a bomb. It is, it's a stink bomb. It's the kind that you deliver and run out of the room to escape culpability. But they're standing firm in this one. They're standing firm in it. And I think people have to realize that instead of just monitoring cable news, which is what I've been doing since it came down, there was a way around this. But you have to dig in, get tough, and really go there. And that's what I wish the left would do here, instead of just fighting to get back what we've already won.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, like on the defense. Look, there are certain other structural, strategic inequities in the way that our politics works. In that, I have often said that it is harder sometimes on the left to do what you need to do than on the right. In that, we would, for instance, let's say there's an issue that we want to deal with. We want to get people to care about climate change or whatever. We have to not only mobilize people to put pressure on politicians who don't want to do anything about it, but we also have to encourage, like, looking ahead to the future, a little bit of empathy for people who might be more greatly affected by climate change than you, compassion, those sorts of things. What do they have to do? They have to scare the hell out of their voters. That's pretty much it. That's all they, it's super easy to tell people, oh, by the way, there's a whole bunch of people and you're a victim now. They're totally coming for you. They're probably gonna kill you, whatever. They're gonna take your job, definitely. They're gonna take your spot in college, which also, by the way, you shouldn't wanna go to. Colleges are dens of communism. But if you did wanna go there, they're gonna take your spot. And like, just scare the hell out of people about literally every topic. And so that makes it a little bit easier. In this case, yeah, this is an area where I don't feel like there has been over decades a significant push, significant to the scale of the right-wing assault on these programs. We wanna give people a bit of an idea, by the way, of where things might go as a result of this, because we have some evidence in that affirmative action has already been banned in a number of different states for a number of years. States like Arizona, California, by the way, Florida, Idaho, Michigan, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, and Washington. At the University of North Carolina, white students have been overrepresented for the past 30 years, with the white freshman class approaching racial parity only in 2020. Black students have remained underrepresented by around 10 points. You can see Harvard's freshman enrollment changing over time in this map. So basically, just roll back those. go to the states that already have bans against it, and you can see when the ban was initiated, generally, whatever effect towards equity had been seen, within a few years, 50% of that was gone. That's what we've seen in a number of different states, including in California. So look, this is going to drastically affect the lives of literally millions of people, Sharon. And it just sucks to be like, you know, right on the verge of it, knowing the cliff that we're about to plunge into.
Yeah, it does. And you know, as you were ticking off the stats and how far we've come and how much we've lost, it seems like an advantage to me. If your mommy, your daddy, your grandpa, and everybody else went to that North Carolina college, it seems like an unfair advantage. And that's what I'm talking about. You should be the ones, you know, filing the lawsuits. You're dead on that all they have to do is scare people, and that's their low bar grading on a curve threshold. But there are things that we can do, instead of just pointing out that Clarence Thomas, he probably doesn't have mirrors at his home. I don't even know if he knows he's black and grew up in the South. I mean, it's that serious. I think he's surrounded by people who don't look like him for sure, but also think a certain way, and he's been indoctrinated, or it's self-preservation and what he can get out of this thing. But at the end of the day, who cares about him? Pack the court, figure it out, and get it done. If you truly value things that you say you value, it's time for a more aggressive approach here.
Yeah, yeah. Bear in mind, by the way, although in the case I'm about to cite, the conservatives did not win. when it came to that insanely gerrymandered, I believe it was Alabama map that the Supreme Court effectively overturned, Clarence Thomas was fine with that. He wanted that to continue. Again, look, I guess that's his ideology.
There's no mirrors whatever, in his house, John. There's no mirror.
Yeah.
You understand? Okay.
And when you look at polls of conservative white Americans, they believe that like the principal victim of racism in the country is and has been white people. So to them, rolling back minimal judicial protections against race-based gerrymandering, or minimal consideration of race as one of many factors in college admissions. Yeah, no, you do have to get rid of those because we have been being attacked by the system for decades, and now finally there will be equality. Jesus. By the way, you know, I'm glad that you brought up, you know, the legacy, because there will be right wingers coming out of this being like, yes, now there is no consideration of race. Race is not going to give you preference to any of these things. That's so. I don't know. As you pointed out, there's legacy. Obviously, if you were to break down by racial demographics, there's going to be differences in prior generations college enrollment, which means that if you are giving consideration to people who had parents or grandparents that went to college, that is a racial advantage for certain races and not for others. Standardized testing, which has been shown to have racially discriminatory impacts used in the admissions of many colleges, that is a racial effect on it. College essays, by the way, the people who are grading college essays, there's long been shown to be like a preference for people who come from the same cultural background as them. They evaluate essays based on that. That is a racial influence on college admissions. And what we're sketching out here is basically all of it, other than maybe GPA. And I have a feeling that probably has some effects on it too. So like they are taking away one racial impact on admissions and then leaving all of the other racial impacts on admissions, basically.
Yeah, it makes no sense, and they make no sense. It's mind-boggling unless this is what you're into and this is your thing. I went to Georgetown University, okay, the Hilltop, and I can't tell you. You look to the left, you look to the right. I went to school with so many legacy students. So many legacy students, but you're right, because there's this mad goofball wing that is so fringe, right? But then there's those other people that you talked about who are, God, it's painful to get it out, good people who actually believe that they are the victims of affirmative action, that it's taking what belongs to them. Good people who've been indoctrinated to believe this, who don't know their history, don't know their facts. And if they live in Florida, much of the country, but specifically Florida, that's gonna continue, by the way. Okay, more generations not knowing their history. But it's really sad because you have to win those people over. And I don't know how you do that. It's like Barack Obama said, you can't bomb everyone. We gotta win hearts and minds here. There's not enough ammunition to kill off all the people who hate us. So you gotta win hearts and minds. And I don't know how you do that when we're surrounded and swimming. We're literally swimming in lies.
Look, how do you convince people that just constantly looking for excuses to see yourself as the victim is not the best way to live your life? It's easier, and a lot of people, particularly intellectually, are quite lazy. And that's what they're playing on. That is how you can have that in the structural inequity of the Electoral College, the distribution of Senate seats between rural states and all that. That is how you have right-wingers still able to sort of compete at the national level. Yeah, it's just a lot of laziness, a lot of just wanting to believe. They're just desperate to believe that they're better, automatically by birth, better than other people.
I want a mirror that shows me as 30 pounds lighter than I am, and then I just don't have to bother to do the work. If I could just have that funhouse mirror. Are there the ones that are in the reverse? They make you look skinny. That's what
I've been in circuses that have that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just grab one of those and there's no need to do the work. I have Peloton sitting over there that's full of dust.
It would be one thing if they were like, we can't have affirmative action because that has nothing to do with whether you'll be good at the college. So how dare you consider that? And then also getting rid of legacy, because what does that have to do with how good you would be? But they don't have to be consistent, even to make their extreme positions more palatable. Like Trump, we're gonna put up the final bleed or whatever. says, this is a great day for America. People with extraordinary ability and everything else necessary for success. Blah, blah, blah. We don't need to read anything else. What's the everything else necessary for success? As Sharon already laid out, for a lot of people, the fact that their parent went to the college, which has nothing to do with their ability to do well. And yet they, are there conservatives clamoring to get rid of that? It is literally, like, even if you ignore the racial component of legacy, it is institutionalized elitism. That's all it is. I come from a family line that has done well historically, monetarily, they have influence, they have connections. So I automatically do better than you peasants. And the right wingers are not clamoring to get rid of that. Even though supposedly the right wing's super populist these days, they question the global elites and all that. If that literally meant anything other than Jewish people around the globe, then they would have to ask for an end to this program. But there is literally nothing to right wing populism. It is a millimeter deep. Any final thoughts?
Donald Trump went to Penn, and all the Trump kids went there too. Is that correct? That to me says it all. Okay, about what's really the real affirmative action in this country, where money, power, legacy, white privilege wins out. That's what's really going on here. And you're right. I truly want to be someone who can take a good look at herself, despite the mirror reflection earlier. I really do. When I ran track, I didn't want to be in a heat with people who, you know, they have all these heats, and then the best people, top two out of each heat, get to the finals. I wanted to be in a heat where I would be challenged, not like the heat where they put, you know, people who weren't gonna make it to the final, then you just easily get a pass through. I wanna be challenged. I wanna know that when I measure myself, it's measured accurately. And I always wanna do better. And I don't understand this painting of the world to suit your ego or your insecurities, I guess. I just don't understand it.
I don't know. Different sorts of people.
Yeah.
We're gonna move on to other news just briefly. We will eventually have more positive news, but we do need to take stock of some of the important stuff going on, including this update. We are just now learning about some of the statements that Daniel Penny made to police within 10 minutes of the killing of Jordan Neely. You should know that there have been developments in this case as well. Penny pleaded not guilty on Wednesday in the May 1st death of Jordan Neely, who was a homeless panhandler and street performer who prosecutors and witnesses agree had been acting erratically on a subway car. So they agree on that. What isn't agreed on, although many right wingers online are saying, is that thus he deserved to die. That's where I have to disagree. But we have moving ahead of that judicial process. We're gonna give you updates on where it's gonna go. But first, I do wanna give you some of the statements that Daniel Penny made to police. He apparently said, the guy came in, he threw blank. There's some swears in here. He's like, I'm ready to go to prison for life. I'm ready to die. I'm ready to die. And I was standing behind him. I think I might have just put him in a choke, put him down. We just went to the ground. He was trying to roll up. I had him pretty good. I was in the Marine Corps. My phone number is blank. He was rolling. He was rolling. When he was in a choke, he was going crazy. He came on, threw blank, was like, I'm gonna go to prison forever. According to people on the scene, he was choked for more than 2 minutes straight. And the guy who killed him acknowledges to police, when we were rolling around, he was going crazy. You were literally choking the life out of him. And there are lots of people that see all of these details and still think not only that he should not suffer any consequences, but that he is in fact a hero. We're gonna give you a few of those, but Sharon, what do you make of these police statements?
Yeah, they think he's a hero, $3 million worth too, donating funds to him. I think that he is a sick individual and not the kind that you're so sick you should escape consequences. Listen to what you said there, and I'm looking at it too. He's acting irate, dropping things on the floor. I don't care if I go to jail, I don't care if I die. I don't care if you do feel afraid in that moment. You can be afraid, and that doesn't mean you get to kill someone. You can watch other people be afraid. You know, there's people who are afraid of chihuahuas walking down the street on the other side. They've not approached, they've not barked, they've not nipped. They're afraid of dogs. If you're afraid of a black man yelling on a subway who appears to have mental health concerns, that doesn't mean you get to kill him. This is a very sick, dangerous individual, and that he's been propped up a la Zimmerman and others like him in this regard after doing something so horrible. What is it like to choke the life out of a man, a stranger? His own statement says what he was doing when Daniel Penny, when he came up behind him and decided to put him down, which is a term they use for dogs, by the way. And I don't want you to even use it for four-legged friends. It's a sick thing that this guy, I can hardly look at him when I consider what was done here.
Yeah, it's just like from his own, we already knew from the witnesses, but he admits it. I snuck up behind a guy, grabbed him in a chokehold, and would not release him until he died.
America, look at your life. If this is okay, look at your life.
And people are gonna be responding to this video saying, no, he was a hero, he should have done that. So I have a question to those commenters. What are the range of behaviors that were you to engage in on a subway? Anyone there is fully justified in murdering you. What are the things that, like, so if you have a bad day, if you scream or something, can we murder you? Or you, what if you throw food in the ground? Can some random person sneak up behind you and choke the life out of you? I am assuming that you do not actually believe that, as is the case in so much else in politics. I assume that when you post the comments, when you tweet, when you talk, you're not actually even pretending to express an actual value, an actual principle. There's no consistency to any of this. Obviously, this shouldn't happen to you, but to him, because he's a different race than you, he doesn't have housing like you do or whatever. Suddenly, that makes it justified. And to have people like Ron DeSantis, Marjorie Greene, calling him a good Samaritan. They decided to invoke biblical language. I honestly, look, I have to admit the limitations of my knowledge. I'm an atheist and it's been a long time since I've been an active participant in church. It's been a while since I read the tale of the good Samaritan. Who did he choke to death again? I don't remember. Which was the biblical figure that he choked to death from behind? But anyway, yeah, as you said, he's raised $3 million. Here's a question to everyone in the chat. If your house is broken into and you were assaulted and you needed legal fees, like you didn't kill anyone, but you were in fact hurt, do you think you could raise $3,000? But this person kills a person and gets $3 million. There is always money to be raised when you kill people. Rittenhouse had no trouble getting the money. Yeah. Zimmerman was a celebrity for literally years. My, they love vigilantes in America. Any other thoughts?
If a vigilante, remember when Marjorie Taylor Greene was running down the hall hunting AOC? She was hunting her. This is the same Marjorie Taylor Greene that called Lauren Boebert a bee, right? Is that, this is the same lady, vile language, hunting people. I think she's making real threats at times because she's inducing others to actually take a swipe at some of these people. What if someone came up behind her and put her in a chokehold because they had to render her neutral? They had to neutralize this aggressive behavior. She had not yet grabbed AOC, but she was hunting her. Would that be okay? This double standard, it's not even well thought out. I love a good debate. I could argue either side. I just, maybe I enjoy arguing, okay? I just enjoy it. It's not even worth my time. It's not a thoughtful debate. Just raise your hand if you are racist and you think you're better than this black man. That would be easier. And then we could move on to something else.
Yeah. Yeah, what you're doing is the thing that I often do that I know intellectually is a waste of time. Again, asking for consistency. Like assuming that someone would seek to not be wildly hypocritical. We knew coming out of the Rittenhouse thing, we're done with that. We're done with what justifies self-defense because they believe simultaneously that because there were people around him, Rittenhouse was justified in shooting whoever he wants because he was scared. But if you were scared by him shooting and killing people, so you attacked him, that was not justified.
Yeah.
And he is thus justified because you're attacking him, even though you don't have a gun and he does, he's justified in killing you. Like the justification just flips back and forth, totally nonsensically. But again, it is sensical if what you're expecting is not consistency, it's just I like him, he can do whatever he wants. If I was in his situation, I could do whatever I want.
You've mastered it. You've mastered the argument.
That's all.
Give you a headache, but you've mastered it.
It is, I kind of have one. Penny is due back in court on October 25th. He was released on, I believe, $100,000 bail. It was provided by family members of George Santos. I'm kidding. But anyway, yeah, so much money from anonymous donors. People who are hard off economically being like, you know what? I'm gonna give $30 to this guy because I saw online that he killed a man. I'll never understand it. There are actual charities that you could donate to. Okay, with that, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, lots more news to get to.
I knew we couldn't go back to the same failed policies when I ran. So I came into office determined to change the economic direction of this country, to move from trickle-down economics to what everyone on Wall Street Journal and Financial Times began to call Bidenomics.
Okay, so Bidenomics is a term that has generally been used over the last year or so by people who are incredibly critical of the way that Biden is addressing the economy. Some of them critical of what he is actually doing, some of them critical of an imaginary Biden who is a leftist communist that's doing things that leftists aren't even asking for. And if they did ask for them, he wouldn't do them. But anyway, he has done a lot. And there has been movement in the economy. We're gonna evaluate to what degree he should get some credit because he is being attacked a lot. Anyway, here's a bit more of him sketching out what he's accomplished.
Bidenomics is working. When I took office, the pandemic was raging and our economy was reeling. Supply chains are broken, millions of people unemployed, hundreds of thousands of small businesses on the verge of closing after so many had already closed. Literally hundreds of thousands on the verge of closing. Today, the US has the highest economic growth rate leading the world economies since the pandemic, the highest in the world.
Okay, so there he's talking about business closures, supply chain, all of that stuff. He also got into the federal tax rate. Let's listen to that.
Does anyone here think the federal tax system is fair? Raise your hand. No matter how much money you make, we're gonna make it fair by eliminating loopholes for crypto traders, hedge fund managers. Big Oil made $200 billion last year and got a $30,000 tax break, $30 billion tax break. We're gonna get billionaires to pay up a little bit, at least the minimum tax. You know, when we began, there were 750, before the pandemic, 750 billionaires in America. Now there are 1,000. You know how much their average tax is? They pay federal tax? 8% taxes. No billionaire should pay lower tax rate than a school teacher, a firefighter, a cop.
No billionaire should pay a lower tax rate than a firefighter, school teacher, cop. I agree with that. I would also say they shouldn't exist, and that we would all be better off if they didn't, but that's just me. Maybe I'm the Biden they say Biden is. In any event, we have some more numbers. I am curious though, from your point of view, Sharon, he's trying to refocus this presidential election, I think, around what has actually been done on the economy. And we know that a lot of people, we're gonna get into the polls, aren't necessarily buying it, even if the numbers he's saying are true. So what do you make of all this?
Yeah, because he's still swimming upstream with that lie. It's desperate. Telling the truth and laying out this methodical, here's my record, sadly, in these times is desperate. You're gonna have to reach America, the USA Today Cliff Notes version. And this isn't getting it done to me. And by the way, Bidenomics doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue for me, okay? And I also don't like it because I like originality and to follow, you know, Reaganomics. Here you go again. You're just following them again. And you have to have an original thought. And this does not get it done for me. I'm looking for, hey, this is where we are, a rap, verse, a jingle, something to sell it and drive it home to your audience. And I'm not suggesting that he should be the one to get in the studio and deliver it. No, that's not what I'm suggesting, okay? But there's some kind of way we should be able to message things. The other side's able to do it, just on lies. You know, although they did get the Supreme Court done and they did end abortion and now affirmative action, so they're getting things done. Okay, he got things drawn. But I just, no, you know, despite the numbers, you didn't do anything unless somebody knows you did it. And that's the sad reality.
Yeah, I agree. It probably shouldn't be Biden that actually does it. I assume Mike Buttigieg's car. I'm sure he's rapping in there. We can get a little bit of that. I agree with you. Bidenomics not great. I'd go with the Joe economy.
Ew, average Joe. Now you see that? No, it's okay though because the average Joe. The average Joe. I am you. Okay.
Exactly. Average Joe, that's a good way to go. Anyway, so here are the facts. Unemployment, 3.7%. Okay. Obviously, it had been very, very significantly higher, you know, during the pandemic, which is not strictly speaking just an economic thing, but it obviously had impacts. Inflation has fallen to 4% from a peak of 9.1% last June. Inflation obviously still higher than I think pretty much anyone would want it to be. The Federal Reserve wants it to cap at 2%. So people still worried about that, although it obviously has fallen quite a bit. The country regained all of the jobs shed during the pandemic by July 2022. That does not, by the way, mean that it regained the same jobs or jobs with the same pay and benefits and all that. But the absolute number has recovered. Unemployment rate remains low, as we talked about, the lowest since 1969. The US added 339,000 jobs in May alone. So there are a good number of different sort of macroeconomic indicators that look pretty good. It is still, at the end of the day, going to come down to what do people think about their own position, their position in the present, and what they think is going to happen in the future. Do they believe that they're going to still have their job in a year? Do they believe that they're going to be able to buy a house in 2 years? What do they think about their wages, their purchasing power right now? It isn't just if they have a job. So there might be a bit of a disconnect there. But as of right now, 30% of US adults say they think the national economy is good. That's up from 25% last month. So I guess moving in the right direction for Biden. No more than about a third have called the economy good since 2021. So, I mean, he's basically up to the high that we've had post pandemic. I don't know how much more he can expect than that, but I expect that he is going to try to put you know, a lot of his attention in the campaign into these issues. Sharon, any other thoughts?
Well, just this, you know, we can get lost sometimes in statistics. And when you throw out those numbers, sure, they seem to be moving in the right direction. I don't doubt them, but I need to know who those people are. And I think they've got to be broken down into subgroups. What do Black Americans say? Black women, okay? What do poor Americans in the Midwest say about the same questions? How do they answer it? That to me is going to be meaningful to him as he makes the case for reelection across the country. It really is, because you're going to need people to get up off their couch who may not necessarily be excited by you, okay? And they may have heard some things about Hunter that aren't true. And you're gonna need them to go to the polls. And so you're gonna have to energize not people, but certain people, and be specific to their circumstances.
Okay, we're gonna move on to very different news. Talk about a character we have not discussed in quite some time. Let's do it. Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison and apparently not loving the experience so far. So much so that according to reports from inside, she is being labeled prison Karen. Is that true or not? We're gonna dive into the evidence because we do, after all, know. We don't, you know, fail to acknowledge that for many people locked up, the experience is devastating, sometimes needlessly so. It's systemic problems that we've been advocating for fixing for some time. So let's see if the particular complaints that Ghislaine Maxwell has been making line up with what we think about prison life. By the way, she has made 400 complaints so far. Spare that in mind. She apparently has complained about lackluster vegan menu options. She whined about unfair treatment, demanded that authorities at her prison in Florida give her immediate access to black hair dye. She apparently got hypoallergenic bedding after complaining to staff that the standard issue prison pillows were triggering her allergies. I suffer from allergies, so I sort of understand that one. Anyway, she complains about inmates, she complains about guards, she complains about the laundry lady being rude to her. According to an insider, she is, quote, as I said, the prison Karen. She can file a grievance over anything. She has over 400. She complains about food, bedding, when they cancel temple because of bad weather or late setting up her legal calls. She had this big debate about hair dye. She apparently paid an inmate $200 for hair dye before she did a video interview with British TV. I did not know that you could still do televised international interviews while you're in prison, but apparently that is actually a thing. She also says that prison authorities are breaching her rights by shining a torch in her cell every 15 minutes, subjecting her to invasive searches and filming her at all hours. Those seem like more significant infringements to me than some of this other stuff, and seems more in line with what we've heard about other prisons. But I also want people to bear in mind that whatever it is that you're imagining when you imagine the prison that Ghislaine Maxwell is in, you're probably not quite right. She was supposed to go to FCI Danbury. That's the prison that inspired the series Orange is the New Black. Instead, she ended up going to this prison in Tallahassee, and you can actually see it right here. The front of it looks identical to a high school in Southern California. My point of view, not the high school I went to in Connecticut, but so not loving the experience. Bear in mind, it's prison. Also bear in mind what she did. I'll remind you in a little bit, but Sharon, what do you make of all this?
Once a Karen, always a Karen, that's number one. And I too, when you flashed the picture of where she is, I was thinking, Zach, Kelly, Lisa, you know, they look, it looked like Saved by the Bell or something. But I will say this, it's made me a little bit angry. I was laughing a little bit. And I know you're gonna get into what she's there for, but how dare you, Karen? And it's so typical. How dare you? Intrusive searches, filming without permission or against her will or all day or whatever. Do you understand the victims here? Okay. Her victims were treated horrifically, life-altering ways. The fact that she's doing interviews in this minimum security prison and paying for bad hair dye, it just makes me so angry too. America's. I know she's in the federal system, right? Is this the federal system?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Low security federal correctional institution.
I wish she was in a state prison in Georgia where I live. And I'm not for prisons, private prison. I'm not for that. But she needs to understand what some other people are going through. And some of them, I believe still illegally, I mean, it's really slavery is what's going on. I don't know if they're actually picking the cotton in all places, but that's really what's going on here. She could use a dose of reality, okay, that yeah. HBO doesn't pen.
Yeah, I almost don't even like talking about this because you and I, everyone watching this, we have so many different places that we can funnel our empathy and compassion into. And if at some point you run out, I think that's understandable considering all the different things that we track every day. So I don't particularly have a lot of empathy for someone who was literally a supplier for one of the most notorious rapists of our time, who delivered like underage girl after underage girl to be abused and manipulated and literally raped over and over and over again. Like, so when I hear that, oh, she doesn't get to make her hair the color she wants, I don't have a lot of empathy for it. But I also don't like focusing too much on that because I do think that prison reform is very necessary. I just feel like, how about we get most prisons to the point where they're worried about the vegan food options? I'm a leftist. I personally think that if you're a vegan and you're locked up, you should probably be able to eat vegan food. But I don't know, when you've been rich your whole life and you've been able to get away with it and you've been shielded by your connections and all that, I don't know. I'm more worried about the people who are being locked up in solitary confinement for literally years, who are being driven insane by the conditions they're in, rather than you who can't look as spiffy for your televised interview as you'd like. I don't know.
Yeah. And
don't
again,
traffic kids.
Remember. Again, the victims, you said 400 complaints. She was able, and her cohort, okay, they were able to escape any consequence for so long because nobody cared about these people. Yeah. Nobody cared. And I just wish that the 400 complaints, and I'm with you, you let her eat vegan, who cares? Just don't let her back out, okay? For now, I don't really want to pay for her. But the fact that she's being listened to, and there's an anonymous source. I would rather, why not go on the record? Because they're afraid to, okay? They're afraid probably not just of their jobs, but of her. It's just so, here we are again. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Karen.
Anyway, it reminds me of, I'll close on this, Marjorie Greene, who every once in a while has to pretend that she cares about what's happening to prisoners because some of the prisoners tried to overthrow the government on January 6th. And I just think, like, maybe do something about it. Like, how about get rid of solitary confinement for the insurrectionists and everyone? How about that? But no, that would be progress. We can't have it. There are days of the news that are tougher than others. And one of the ways that I know that it's starting to get to me is I'm developing an eye twitch right now from the news and how it's affecting me.
It's okay. It's not your allergies. Just put eye drops or something. Maybe just need a few eye drops.
I probably do need to. By the way, I am being told by Stellar Wingman that on Indisputable's I Wish a Karen Would segment, it is not just white Karens.
No, it's everyone who's earned the right to be there.
There you go. And I would say that Indisputable is, they are the authority.
And so if
they've been showing like diversity of Karenhood, then these races should acknowledge that, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna move into one more story. It's a doozy, everyone. Prepare yourself. Former Trump White House aide Miles Taylor has an upcoming book. It's already been generating some bombshells that are disputed, including claims about Stephen Miller approving of atrocities against migrants. This one perhaps even more unsettling on a personal level. It has to do with Donald Trump and comments that he has made about his daughter Ivanka. And I know what you're thinking. I already know about those comments. No, these are new ones, maybe even worse. Here's an excerpt from Blowback, a warning to save democracy from the next Trump. Aide said he talked about Ivanka Trump's breasts, her backside, and what it might be like to have sex with her. Remarks that once led John Kelly to remind the president that Ivanka was his daughter. Afterward, Kelly retold that story to me, Miles Taylor, in visible disgust. Trump, he said, was a very, very evil man. So they don't go into more specificity about the comments. When you say he wondered what it might be like to have sex with her, I don't know how at length he went. And people have been reaching out to, you know, the former chief of staff and other people who might have been there for comment. The thing about this that was also true of the Stephen Miller story, though, is it's easy to say Miles Taylor worked in the Trump White House. Now he's selling books on these stories he has. Who's to say if it's true or not? But he is naming specific names. He's saying John Kelly was there. John Kelly said this to me. And if you were going to lie about something so specific, why would you name the specific name? Because John Kelly can confirm or deny it. He's almost certainly going to deny it. And so that just seems weird to me. That said, there's also the content of the claims. Sharon, what do you make of this?
I don't need any more proof from people who, for some reason, decided it was a good idea to go work for this guy who always showed us and told us exactly who he is, a perv. A nasty sexual assaulting pervert, okay? That he then says these things purportedly about his own flesh and blood. I'm not surprised. He said he walks up to strangers and grabs their genitalia. That's what he told us. Never mind what John Kelly related after the fact. And I'm no John Kelly fan, but at least he was seemingly, I guess it's his own version, somebody who stood up in the room and said, hey dude, enough is enough. But this is who Donald Trump is, and we all need to understand it. He just sued E. Jean Carroll because she continues to use the word rape when all he did was sexually assault her. Okay, so what do you make of it? I don't know. Lacking boundaries, molesty seemingly, okay, if only in thought. And it is just, he's a ball of just grossness. He's one of those fruitcakes that you get at the holidays with those jelly things in it, those little gelatin little pings in it that make me want to hurl. Okay, I don't know who invented them or why they're even there. I feel the same way about Donald Trump. As a woman, as a black person, as a human,
I agree with you on Trump. I don't know what those pinwheely things are, if they sound okay, I would give that a try. But I agree about Trump. I also just want to point out what should be obvious. If one syllable of this was being credibly claimed about Biden, you would literally never hear the end of it. But this right-wing movement that has been hyper-focused on the idea that rich, politically connected elites in our society are all 201 pedophiles. That is all that they've talked about for years. They created the QAnon conspiracy theory centered around that. The elites are pedophiles, the elites are pedophiles, the elites are coming for your kids. Do not care about any of these claims made about Donald Trump. It's not even that they apologize for them. They literally don't even care to address it. And look, it would be easy to say, Miles Taylor, what does Miles Taylor know? But like, this is not the first thing that's come up. I'm going to run you through some of the lowlights of Donald Trump and Ivanka.
Said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
You know? Stop it. Oh, it's so weird. Stop
you
it.
Know what? You are sick.
By the way, your daughter.
She's beautiful.
Can I say this? A piece of ass.
Yeah.
She looks more voluptuous than ever.
She's actually always been very voluptuous. She's tall. She's almost 6 feet tall.
Daughter Ivanka.
Yeah.
She's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body.
Yeah, she's hot.
What's the favorite thing you have in common with your father?
Either real estate or golf.
Donald, with your daughter?
Well, I was going to say sex, but I can't relate that. I can't relate that.
How was that not the end of all of this? How you should never show your face in public again. That's the weird, like no one I know has ever said anything as weird as that. And that's top 50 weird things that he has said, but that doesn't mean that what Miles Taylor is claiming is true, but it damn sure makes it more believable. It is so wildly weird to talk about your daughter that way. And I will say, I'm perfectly comfortable doing segments that are critical of Donald Trump. I think that's probably pretty clear at this point. I actually am a little bit hesitant to talk about this, maybe for obvious reasons, because it also involves Ivanka. And Ivanka's very defensive of Trump. She says that he has 100% respect for women. She's never claimed that he's said anything to her, let alone done anything. And until she does that, I assume that that is what the truth is. But regardless, I can only imagine what it has been like throughout her life, constantly going from comment to comment of her father. She was sitting next to him. And what is she supposed to do? A gasp, be aghast at what he just did? No, she has to laugh along to it. That's her dad, that's what he does. But there's no way that that's not deeply weird to a daughter to have your father acting that way. Sharon?
Deeply weird as well when you have seemingly normal women surrounding in that segment who are doubled over in laughter as well, because we created this kind of monster. And I want to thank you for that segment. I don't need Ozempic. Okay, I'll be perfectly skinny because I cannot eat after seeing that.
Glad to be of service.
Yeah,
I'm gonna show one more clip just to demonstrate that this is not just about Ivanka. He was years ago on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. He was asked about his daughter Tiffany, who was, when they filmed this, 1 year old. And I want you to remember that as we play this tape.
Now, Donna, what does Tiffany have of yours, and what does Tiffany have of Marla's?
Well, I think that she's got a lot of moral. She's really a beautiful baby, and she's got Marla's legs. We don't know whether or not she's got this part yet, but time will tell.
No right wingers care about that. None of them think. That doesn't fit into the whole QAnon thing? That doesn't fit into the elite pedophilia? No, just it's him being him. He's being funny. He's being cute back in like the late 80s, all the way up to 2015 when he told the Rolling Stone about Ivanka. She's really something and what a beauty. If I weren't happily married and, you know, her father, dear God. That's the end of the show, or the end of the first hour anyway. Thank you everyone for joining us. We have more coming up in the aftermath that thankfully will not have to do with Donald Trump's sexual fantasies. Lots more to come after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.